This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Matthew Vadim of the Capital Research Center. His book is Subversion, Inc., How Obama's Acorn Red Shirts Are Still Terrorizing and Ripping Off American Taxpayers. It's published by WND Books. If you missed the first part of our conversation, you can find it on this website. We talked mainly about the threat that Acorn still poses to American democracy and why it's still relevant as Barack Obama heads towards a re-election bid in the year 2012. But now we continue my conversation with my question to Mr. Vadim as to what the so-called kryptonite might be for Acorn. How does an organization this powerful and prone to violent tactics get stopped?
Well, you just have to monitor these people. You have to expose them, and you have to get journalists to report about them. And that's never been an easy task, and it's especially not going to be easy right now because most of the American people think that Acorn is dead, and they don't understand that it is merely taking a pause and it is restructuring itself. It's having, you know, like after a failed football season, this is a rebuilding year for Acorn. They are putting the organization back together. And you know, parts of it were not even dissolved because they're legally separate, such as Acorn Housing continues to operate, continues to try to get people to take out mortgage loans that they can't afford. It has simply changed its name to Affordable Housing Centers of America. The Voter Fraud Division, as I like to call it, the Vote Factory, Project Vote, which Obama worked for in 1992 and is a branch of Acorn, it operates right now unmolested from the same office on 8th Street Southeast in Washington, D.C., across from the Marine Barracks that Acorn used as its Washington, D.C. base for decades. So these groups are still out there. It's just that they've distanced themselves from the Acorn brand because it was destroyed thanks to the fine work of the conservative activists Hannah Giles and James O'Keefe, who caught Acorn employees encouraging them to create a brothel for pedophiles and to lie to the tax authorities and to defraud banks in order to make it happen. This is just, a lot of people don't understand that this is not an anomaly for Acorn. This is what Acorn does every day. This is why in the videos that you saw, the undercover videos, the Acorn employees, they didn't seem shocked. Did you notice that, Greg? They did not seem concerned. You know, nobody said, oh, well, this is prostitution. That's terrible. I'm going to call the police or, you know, get out of here. They didn't do that. And in only maybe one of the offices where they did their sting, did the Acorn employee, politely tell them to drop dead out in California. The rest of the Acorn employees were only too willing to bend over backwards to help these people do things that are illegal because Acorn is a radical group inspired by the New Left in the 1960s, and they want to destroy the system, and they wage war against it every single day. They're not just some nice group that tries to help poor people. They are, as I've argued in the book, essentially an urban terrorist organization. They try to they pick out their targets and they terrorize them and intimidate them, be they state and local governments or banks or corporations that they're hoping to shake down for donations. They're a dangerous group.
Just a couple minutes left here with Matthew Vadim. The book is Subversion, Inc. And Matthew, let's talk finances real quickly in our last couple minutes here on a couple of different fronts. You alluded to it a moment ago, and that's Acorn's role in the mortgage crisis. Just how deep were they in peddling loans to folks who probably shouldn't have been trying to get them in the first place, and what kind of pressure were they putting on banks?
Well, what they were doing is they used the Community Reinvestment Act, which came out in the Jimmy Carter years and then was strengthened, was given added enforcement, added teeth in the Clinton years. And so they agitated and they pressured banks to make loans to people who shouldn't have received loans, their constituents in the inner cities of America. And what they would do is they'd go to the banks and say, if you don't do this, we're going to block your merger request. We're going to testify against you. There's an administrative, a regulatory process, and we're going to put in objections and prevent your merger from taking place. So they were very powerful in getting the banks to listen to them. They knew how to focus in on the area where the banks are weakest, because banks traditionally don't fight back very strongly in terms of public relations. They're very timid, very, very conservative in terms of their business approach. If you come along and you surround a bank or you storm it and occupy it with your activists, take it over and have a sit-in, banks get very frightened and they're usually willing to come to the bargaining table pretty quickly. And they've been doing this for decades. And the Community Reinvestment Act allowed them to do this. In fact, it invited them to do it. And Acorn excelled at doing this kind of thing. And if not checked, it's going to keep doing it in the future. This was one of the factors that contributed to, it's not the sole factor, there's interest rates and other policies and that had an impact, but certainly pushing loans onto people who can't afford them is a destructive antisocial thing. In fact, Acorn went even so far, Greg, as to strong-arm banks into accepting welfare as income on mortgage applications. Think about that for a second. If you're on welfare, should you be buying a home? I think most reasonable people would say no, you should be renting until such time as you can afford a home. But that wasn't good enough for Acorn. Acorn wants to destroy the system. So they were quite happy to overload the financial system with all sorts of bad loans by forcing banks to accept welfare benefits such as food stamps as income on loan applications. And this is so incredibly nihilistic and destructive, and I'm amazed more people weren't outraged about it while it was happening. But it didn't get a lot of press coverage. Acorn and the profession of community organizing were virtually ignored by the mainstream media until a community organizer in the person of Barack Obama became a serious contender for the White House. Then suddenly, everybody wanted to know what a community organizer was. So now that the public has been educated about the dangers and the evils of Saul Alinsky-inspired community organizing, people have to be on guard, and they have to get upset about this kind of thing and push reporters to cover it and talk about it at Tea Party rallies and engage in activism in order to serve as a check on this evil antisocial behavior.
Matthew, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you, sir, very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Greg.
Matthew Vadim is a senior editor at the Capital Research Center in Washington. His new book is Subversion, Inc., How Obama's Acorn Red Shirts Are Still Terrorizing and Ripping Off American Taxpayers. It's published by WND Books. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.